Good evening. It's great to see you and to be with you. So you have three solid days in this retreat. I've heard from some people how it's turning out. And I imagine there may be times you may have thought, I could be at Club Med. Why am I at Club Meditation? A great teacher said that in order to understand the mind, we need to sit down and observe the mind. And when we do that, we begin to see all the different thoughts and beliefs that lead to unskillful states, and the thoughts and beliefs that lead to skillful states. And again, we see into the Four Noble Truths. The realization of suffering, the cause of suffering, the cessation of suffering, and the path that leads to the cessation of suffering. It's a lot on suffering. And sometimes I wonder, is there any room for happiness in this practice? Last February, I was doing a month-long retreat at Spirit Rock out in California. And about week three, someone in the back of the room raised their hand and said, this is during the question and answer, said, I'm just wondering, has anyone in this room been thinking, why didn't I take the blue pill? This is a really challenging practice. And we're all drawn here for different reasons, perhaps. And some of us want a little less suffering, a little less fear, a little more peace. Maybe you're drawn by the promise of full awakening, being fully awake. And in all the times and all the different ways that we get lost in trance in this practice, as we've been saying again and again, having that intention, clear intention, is very, very helpful. When a plane is crossing the Atlantic and it's set on autopilot, it's honing in on a particular beam. And when the plane is off target, the autopilot will readjust. So over the course of a transatlantic flight, the plane is actually off course about 80% of the time, constantly readjusting. And that's what we find in our direct experience. We each find our own sense of that middle path, not too tight, not too loose. So tonight, I'd like to talk about one of the more elusive qualities of this practice, which is happiness. How to cultivate happiness in our practice. And when it comes to the Four Noble Truths, we tend to focus more on number one and number two, on the fact of suffering and the cause of suffering. And it's very important that we embrace that this path is difficult and quite humbling. I've really come to recognize that my mind is shameless. Have you had any experiences where you'll wake out of some thought and think, my God, did I just think that? Do I really believe that? You might notice by now that you may have your top 10 starting to emerge. You know, the top 10 stories that keep coming around, the top 10 feelings that just kind of keep cycling through. And we start to see into the results of aversion and clinging in this practice. You know, we're taught to notice the most obvious and the most predominant things, and inevitably we begin to see how we hold on and how we push away in more and more and more subtle ways. And when we pay attention to to that clinging mind, to that aversive mind, we begin to see all the habitual ways that we hold the moment. And when we look directly at clinging and pushing away, it's a very, very powerful practice. And this can be the source of many insights. The more we notice how we hold, how we push away, we begin to understand that all the difficulties are visitors, that they're not the true state of mind. And when those things fall away, we begin to sense perhaps the more natural state of equanimity, of kindness, of compassion. One of the beautiful things of mindfulness is that in any given moment, you can reflect on how you are holding your experience. This is such a critical part of the practice, to be aware of what's happening while it's happening, and to be aware of how you're holding it. There's this kind of DNA of mindfulness. It's cultivating the wisdom to recognize what's here without a story, without embellishment, to name what is here. And the capacity and the power to be with it, to bear it. So in the midst of all the challenges that come in this practice, to bring ourselves back again and again and again, waking out of the trance to this direct, immediate experience of the here and now, we may begin to sense here and there the possibility of freedom. And you may have noticed a little bit of settling, a little bit of relaxing, maybe a little bit of letting go. And if you haven't, perhaps you can reflect on trusting the process, trusting the teachings. Sometimes the benefits of your practice will not be realized until much later. I have led retreats where people have reported to me later that it was only a week or two later that something opened up inside that was related to the work that they did. One of my teachers talked about how if you're digging a tunnel under a mountain and you're there swinging your pickaxe, you never know when the next swing of the pickaxe will break through to the other side. And it's so critical that we retain a sense of inspiration in our practice, to persevere, to keep going. So perhaps you have seen moments of letting go, moments of happiness. The Buddha teaches about right effort, about how to cultivate the mind, not only to let go of the unskillful states, but how to cultivate skillful states. And it's helpful to kind of reflect on what wholesome and unwholesome are. Unwholesome states, you could say, are born out of greed and hatred and delusion. And these are all the different flavors of resentment, of frustration, of hostility, of greed, of lust, of power, of boredom, restlessness, all these states that lead to more suffering. Wholesome states would be those that are born out of non-greed, out of non-hatred and non-delusion. And these are qualities of generosity, of kindness, of compassion, of equanimity, the states that lead us away from suffering. And it's not enough to know what a wholesome and unwholesome state is. We have to learn through direct experience, little bit by little bit. Or you could say, sit by sit. And we begin to sense what leads to suffering, what leads to happiness. For me, it's very much a process of trial and error. We see what the consequences of our actions and our choices are. And that's where the learning takes place. Or maybe it's better to say that's where the unlearning takes place. The translation for suffering or stress or these unsatisfactory states is in Pali described as dukkha. And I heard a wonderful description of a retreat. It goes like this. Breakfast, dukkha, dukkha, dukkha. Lunch, dukkha, dukkha, dukkha. Nap, dukkha, dukkha, dukkha. Dinner, dukkha, dukkha. It's helpful to reflect on the potential of right effort, of directing our awareness in skillful ways. I've been a little bit knocked out of this retreat. The other evening, I kind of woke up in sort of like a feverish panic. Just kind of, you know, burning up with fever, my head, you know, burning, real nauseous, and I thought, oh my God, I just hope it's close to morning. And I looked over at the clock, it was 11:15. And I thought, oh no. And I just lay there strategizing and worrying and trying to figure out what I had done and how to feel better. And I remembered something that Werner Erhard said a long time ago. He said, the fastest way to be happy is to choose what you already have. It didn't seem like an apical statement to what I was feeling at that time. But I didn't have anything else to do. So I thought, I'm going to choose this. I was feeling so much aversion. And I actively just chose my experience. And I have to say, I really experienced a shift. First, I was curious about all the different symptoms. And I thought, why not just get enthusiastic about it? And what I noticed was, and it was really quite fascinating, I noticed, you know, this bed is actually a really comfortable bed. This is a really nice bed I'm lying on. And then I thought, you know, the yoga classes, they're covered by really wonderful teachers. I don't have to worry about that. There are a number of people who are really concerned and worried and really want to support me. And I began to feel a shift. The symptoms didn't necessarily go away, but my internal attitude shifted profoundly. There is something quite extraordinary about choosing our experience, actively bringing ourselves to what's right here and right now. And you might just sense for a moment, just to sense what's right here, right now for you. If you were to choose this moment, unless this moment feels particularly unsafe, you might just sense what it feels like to say yes to this, to actually invite this moment exactly as it is, in all its wonderful detail. One of the things the Buddha talked about was right effort. And there's some challenges in looking at right effort because we are so instantly given to beating ourselves up and judging ourselves for not doing it right. But I wanted to name these because I found them helpful just to sense how I can bring myself into a more intimate inquiry into happiness. So there are four kinds of right effort, and the first two have to do with unwholesome states. The first is to to abandon unwholesome states that have not arisen. That was my reaction. The second is to abandon unwholesome states that have arisen. Now, this first one is actually pretty simple. It's recognizing what leads you into suffering and avoiding those states. So again, it's sort of trial and error, it's cause and effect. For me, in the past, I enjoy alcohol, having a beer or a glass of wine occasionally. And I began to notice that I didn't feel very good afterward. The next day, I just felt kind of lousy. But I went through a period of time in social situations where just to sort of be agreeable, to kind of join in, because I had pleasant memories of drinking alcohol, that I would, you know, I would have a beer, I'd have a glass of wine, and I consistently felt poorly the next morning. Eventually, I started to not have alcohol, and I didn't feel that state afterward. So that state doesn't arise because I don't engage into that activity. So avoiding unwholesome states that have not arisen. One thing I've noticed on retreat is that if I give myself permission to do a lot of reading, I'll do some reading and then I'll realize I completely missed that whole experience, my whole experience. And so I have come to recognize that if I avoid reading when I'm on retreat, it has a way of bringing me more present. So abandoning unwholesome states when I have arisen. And we've seen these states in great detail these last few days. The wanting mind, the clinging mind, planning, boredom, frustration, getting caught in that endless loop of self-criticism. We begin to see almost the predictable way that we react to certain thoughts. For me, I've just sort of seen it's almost like a jukebox. A certain thought happens, it sets up a chain reaction. If I think too much about the future, I'll notice myself getting anxious, I'll go into self-doubt, and then I go into planning. And I go into strategizing and obsessive thinking. At some point in my experience, I begin to see that that endless loop really doesn't serve me. And sometimes we can think, I don't really need to do this anymore, because we get to see it in our awareness. This is a challenging place to really look at these unwholesome states. We've talked extensively about the practice of RAIN, of recognizing what's happening, to explore what it means to allow, to investigate what it feels like inside, to investigate the beliefs that you're holding in that moment. These are the ways that we get to kind of unpack our experience. We get to unwind the tensions that we're carrying into a retreat. So when we look at cultivating wholesome states, we're encouraging wholesome states that have not yet arisen. And this is learning through our experience what situations and what causes and what conditions lead to non-suffering. And you might reflect on this retreat. What brings you ease and peace in your experience? Perhaps being outside cultivates a greater sense of a wholesome feeling. Maybe having a cup of tea in a window that you can look out of. Maybe it's about not rushing to the next event and giving yourself a little more space. Maybe getting more sleep. Staying hydrated. Maybe something about just surrendering to the schedule and letting the schedule carry you through the day. And these are positive actions that help to cultivate kindness and compassion. It's about perhaps being consciously generous to yourself, being consciously kind to yourself as a practice, practicing being kind to others. And the fourth piece is about sustaining wholesome states that have arisen. And this is surprising for me when I reflect on this, that it actually takes some effort to appreciate the wholesome states when they arise. A teacher once said that negative thoughts are like duct tape, and positive thoughts are like Teflon. We tend to ignore the positive. Our conditioning is very much to look toward what's wrong. So we tend to overlook the times when we're calm and we're tranquil and we're happy. On one retreat, I was struggling with some issue. I don't even remember what it was, but it was sort of like days of sitting with a feeling of disturbance, and it was just sort of cycles and cycles of rain, of recognizing and naming and trying to open myself to it and investigating, and at one point it just dissipated. And I was filled with this, it was kind of a rush of well-being. And the thought that came right on the trail of that feeling of well-being was, okay, what do I work on now? And I started scanning okay, what's next? The effective technique with pleasant sensation is to be mindful, to notice and to appreciate these states when they're here. It's the same kind of investigation when we come into challenging situations. What does this feeling of gratitude feel like right now? Where do I feel it inside? We tend not to notice when we're happy. I have a wonderful blessing to be able to go for a morning hike down by the Potomac River. And I noticed one morning when I was hiking that my mind was very much caught up in planning. I was fantasizing about some project I wanted to do and feeling restless, and sort of bring myself back into the moment, back to walking and sensing and feeling, and my mind would be wandering. And I really brought my attention back, and I just thought, what's going on? And I realized that I was happy. I was just trying to figure out how to be happy in the future, how to keep it going. But in that moment, I was very happy. So there's something in here about checking for moments of happiness, just small moments through the day. It helps us to recognize happiness. It can create a positive feedback loop. When you're having food that you're enjoying, to really delight in those sensations. When you've completed a set, to enjoy that feeling of completion, of staying with your intention. A moment perhaps when you're walking in meditation, to allow yourself to truly receive that moment of pleasure. There's a natural tendency of the mind to focus on what is going wrong. There's a beautiful story of a team of people who would work with people in crisis, in intense crisis, and they would go to disaster areas. And there was one story that struck me so powerfully during after the tsunami. And there was a woman who had lost her family. Most of the village was swept out to sea. And very severe trauma. And as they worked with her, you know, just feeling the trauma in the body and so forth, at one time they asked her, "When did you realize you were a survivor?" And that was the beginning of the shift. The identification from the loss to identification as a survivor. Not that she didn't feel all the pain, but that sense of identity began to shift. In our practice, we recognize that our experience comes from kind of this raw data of energy. And the energy forms into vedana, into unpleasant and pleasant, and sensations that are neither pleasant nor unpleasant, neutral sensation. Oftentimes, we find our experience pretty much focused on the unpleasant and the pleasant. And it requires a certain rigor to bring our attention to that in-between place. The neutral states can be very hard to connect with, and you may have noticed this in your experience, just kind of like a gray zone. The natural tendency of the mind is to space out or to get bored. Someone said that boredom is actually the failure to pay attention. So we can begin to notice if we can feel the calmness in the mind when there's not a lot going on. Can we, when we cultivate a sense of happiness in the subtlety of our experience, kind of between the extremes of pleasant and unpleasant? So happiness can be cultivated by bringing awareness to these states of mind. We can cultivate happiness by cultivating metta, by actively thinking thoughts of kindness. And the phrases of kindness tend to incline the mind toward kindness. For some, when we start engaging into the practice of metta, it can be painful. There can be kind of a contraction that occurs. And particularly when we begin to draw our attention toward forgiveness, it can surface all that which is not forgiven. It can surface old memories of hurt and trauma. Part of the challenge in the practice of metta as a way of cultivating these wholesome states is to stay connected to the sincerity. Metta can so easily become artificial and mechanical. I've certainly had times when I'm just repeating the phrase and I realize it's become utterly mechanical. May you be happy, may you know peace, may you be free from suffering, may all beings be free. The challenge is to look for the feeling inside. And sometimes the feelings are they're embers that are almost cold. But when we can sort of look for, as Sylvia Boorstein says, kind of the echo in the body when we offer kindness toward ourselves or toward another person, when we look for that feeling inside, it's almost like you're blowing on the embers and beginning to kindle that fire. So the practice is really taking joy in the practice itself, to engage fully into the practice. And to see and celebrate the letting go that starts to happen. we sense the space that starts to emerge in our practice. And to look for the happiness in the letting go itself. For me, this has been really about making more space for happiness, making more room for happiness in my life, and bringing more awareness to the states of kindness and generosity and joy. We start to get more familiar with them. We start to recognize them in greater detail and with greater discrimination. And Thich Nhat Hanh said, famously, happiness is available. Please help yourself. So looking at happiness and these teachings around right effort can also lead to confusion. The human mind can use any teaching to beat itself up. And there are certain pitfalls in even inquiring into this. We can feel like we're doing something wrong if we're not feeling happy. So easily the mind goes in that direction. There's something called premature transcendence, where we drop into happiness without really, really being there. Oh no, it's fine that you forgot my birthday again. This also can lead to getting too heady about the practice. Well, what am I supposed to cultivate? What am I supposed to abandon? And I'd like to speak directly to this. Kind of in our practice, we're really attending to what's present. And we're told to not try and change our experience. So it can feel like there's some contradiction here about actively cultivating a state. At the same time, we're told not to try to alter our experience. But if we're engaged into our direct experience, we are engaged into an inquiry that can inevitably lead to insight into letting go. If you focus on old unwholesome states as they arise without trying to change them, it will inevitably lead to seeing the cause of that suffering. If you kind of abide and investigate the wholesome states as they're there, it will lead us to see the cause of happiness. Sometimes I'm asked, if we focus on just the difficult states, does it lead to more difficulty? Am I increasing my suffering by looking at it in greater detail? Am I actually feeding the unpleasant state by bringing my attention to it? And for me, I think this is the key. It's remembering that mindfulness is a non-judgmental state of mind. It's non-judgmental. And it actually allows your experience to take its own natural course. And it tends to kind of reveal the cause. For me, I find this most evident when I encounter anger. Initially, when anger comes up, I either want to nuke it or run away from it. But in those moments when I can bring my attention to it, to name it, to allow it, to begin to investigate it, I begin to see that under the anger there is something else. And when I can really be with it and let it take its own natural unwinding process, I begin to see that under that anger may be some hurt. There might be some really deep embarrassment or some deep shame. The more I sit with it, the more I recognize that there's some unmet need that is just driving my experience. Perhaps if I stay with it, I may begin to recognize that I'm not the only person who feels this way, that other people might feel this way too, and I might begin to feel it soften. I might begin to feel some empathy or some compassion for myself. And that anger will unwind in its own natural time when I can stay with it in non-judgmental awareness. The awareness is the healer. When you have an experience and you recognize that it's not pleasant, awareness recognizes that it's not pleasant. And when we can stay with it, oftentimes we'll find how we contribute to that suffering, how the mind contributes to that. So it's not really a contradiction with the allowing and the cultivating. The Buddha taught that part of our practice is cultivating happiness. It's okay to cultivate happiness. But the way we've been raised, the mind tends to draw us into the same states over and over again. We begin to see all these habits of the mind, the tending toward aversion, the mind tending toward wanting, tending toward anxiety or to anger or toward depression. We get locked into a pattern in the mind. In Sanskrit, it's referred to as samskara. There are literally ruts that we fall into, these habituated ways of being. Sometimes when we examine them, we sort of get pulled in. We can sort of get caught in that undertow. And you may have noticed that in your experience. I certainly have at different times. When I'm investigating something, for example, I might be thinking about a relationship that's troubling. And I can very quickly kind of get caught up in the self-judgment that goes into that. But the more we can stay with our experience, to return again and again to naming what is there, sensing if we can bring a spirit of kindness to it, to stay present to it, we begin to see into the nature of how we construct our experience. There's a story of how someone came to Ajahn Chah, a venerable teacher from Asia, and he was asked, "How can you be so happy in a world full of impermanence, where you cannot protect your loved ones from harm, illness, and death?" The master held up a glass and said, "Someone gave me this glass, and I really like this glass. It holds my water admirably, and it glistens in the sunlight. One day the wind may blow it off the shelf, or my elbow may knock it from the table. I know this glass is already broken, so I enjoy it incredibly." Remembering impermanence can be a wonderful tool for celebrating what we have in this moment. Where our attention goes, the energy flows. For many years, I've ridden the motorcycle, and I have read lots of books about how not to die on a motorcycle. One of the things you may have noticed is, if you've ever seen skid marks on a curve, oftentimes the skid marks go straight into a tree or straight into the guardrail. And what happens is, when someone goes around a corner and they start to lose control, they're thinking, "Don't hit the tree. Don't hit the tree, don't hit the tree," and that's where the energy goes. So when you're taught how to drive, one of the teachings is to keep your eyes focused on the exit of the curve. And where your attention stays focused, the energy tends to move in that direction. So remembering that while our experience may not be happy, the result of our practice can lead to happiness, can be a very helpful thing to remember. It can be helpful to notice when you're suffering, and it can be helpful to notice when you're not suffering. A teacher gave this great example of if you had an accident and you had a broken leg, and let's say you had a cast from your hip to your foot, you'd be hobbling to the bathroom, you'd be having to do sponge baths, you'd be having to figure out how to go downstairs, how to prepare your meals, how to get to work. It would be a very difficult experience. But if you can imagine in a moment that the cast is off and you're healed, imagine how happy you'd feel. You can walk, you can bathe. There's a certain wonder in not suffering. When I was about 14, my family went on a trip into the National Boundary Waters canoe area for 14 days. And on about day 8 through day 11, it rained. Solid rain. And we had canvas tents, which were soaked, and sleeping bags, which were soaked. We were heating with wood, which was soaked. And I had one moment where I remember I was wearing jeans. And you know how it is when it's cold and you're wearing wet jeans? And you move an inch and a whole new fresh set of wet jeans material touches your leg. I looked at my father and I said, if I had an anvil, I would tie it around my neck and I would throw it in the lake. And my dad turned to me and looked at me with a look I had never seen him before. A very steely look. My father had been in World War II, wounded 3 times, missing in action, 2.5 years in the trenches. The only time he wasn't sleeping outside was when he was in the hospital. So my father looked at me. And he said, hey, no one's shooting at us. That shifted my experience dramatically. And every now and then, I remember that. We tend to get caught up in this momentum of anxiety and worry. And then we have moments where we feel exuberant, we feel excited. And we think, this is the way life is supposed to be. There's a tendency to want to live in the highs and fix the lows. And we forget when there isn't a problem. This whole realm of neutral sensation, where we space out or get bored. There's a very deep state of peace and happiness that's potential here. And as a teacher said, we need to acquire a taste for this, to explore this space of no problem. I've always had this thing that I call the 10-minute rule, because I was always kind of chronically late, chronically rushing. And the 10-minute rule is to, wherever you have to be, get there 10 minutes early. And then when I moved down to DC, I realized it actually had to be the 30-minute rule. But there's such a dramatic experience between rushing and having plenty of time. When I'm sitting at a red light and there's plenty of time to get there, it's not a problem. I'm just waiting for the light to change. You're kind of just waiting to go forward. There's nothing wrong. So what does it feel like when there's nothing wrong? It can have a real pleasant quality when you notice that. There can be a real sense of happiness or peace there. So we can cultivate happiness by noticing what's in the way. just asking, what's between me and feeling happy right now? That question tends to kind of heighten the landscape of your experience. We can cultivate happiness to bringing our awareness to states of mind where we're not suffering. And we can cultivate happiness by cultivating metta, by consciously cultivating these immeasurable states of kindness and compassion and love and equanimity, by actively thinking thoughts of kindness, by reflecting on kindness. So there are certain keys to cultivating happiness. Recognizing that suffering is part of our life experience. Remembering that there's a cause of that suffering. Remembering that it is possible to free ourselves. And remembering that there are skillful means, there are certain paths, certain technologies that lead to that greater capacity for freedom and happiness. So it's about not shying away from looking at suffering when it arises in all its different forms. It's reminding ourselves that we can actually be free. There's a beautiful reading that I'd like to share. And if you like, you can close your eyes. It's a very sweet, it's actually described as a song. Happiness cannot be found through great effort and willpower, but is already present in open relaxation and letting go. Do not strain yourself. There is nothing to do or undo. Whatever momentarily arises in the body-mind has no real importance at all, has little reality whatsoever. Why identify and become attached to it, passing judgment upon it and ourselves? Far better simply to let the entire game happen on its own, springing up and falling back like waves, without changing or manipulating anything. And notice how everything vanishes and reappears magically, again and again, time without end. Only our searching for happiness prevents us from seeing it. It's like a vivid rainbow which you pursue without ever catching, or a dog chasing its own tail. Although peace and happiness do not exist as an actual thing or place, it is always available and accompanies you every instant. Don't believe in the reality of good and bad experiences. They are today's ephemeral weather, like rainbows in the sky. Wanting to grasp the ungraspable, you exhaust yourself in vain. As soon as you open and relax this tight fist of grasping, infinite space is there, open, inviting, and comfortable. Make use of this spaciousness, this freedom and natural ease. Don't search any further looking for the great awakened elephant who is already resting quietly at home in front of your own hearth. Nothing to do, nothing to undo, nothing to force, nothing to want, nothing missing. Marvelous. Everything happens by itself. Let's just sit for a few minutes. And we'll close with these words from Ajahn Chah. Try to be mindful and let things take their natural course. Then your mind will become quieter and quieter in any surroundings. It will become still, like a clear forest pool. Then all kinds of wonderful and rare animals will come to drink at the pool. You will see clearly the nature of things. You will see many wonderful and strange things come and go. But you will be still. Problems will arise, and you will see through them. This is the happiness of the Buddha. Try to be mindful and let things take their natural course. Namaste. Thank you for your kind attention. We have a little bit over 30 minutes for walking, and we'll return at 9 o'clock for more.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.